overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Good morning, and welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living. This is a very unique Threshold Sunday for all of us here, because I'm looking out at an audience that's not wearing masks, but an audience who has been fully vaccinated. Well, there's a few masks still here, and we honor that you're respectful, if you haven't had your shots, to protect yourself, to wear a mask. But if you have had your shots and you feel courageous enough to create a new evolutionary human being, I keep my mask handy if I should need it. But for now, I'm going to trust that we're turning a page in our history. We've been through a pandemic. Oh, I guess we're still in a pandemic. I was talking to my prayer partner in Canada, and they don't have the luxury of all the vaccines. There's still a long list. And he said some of his friends are driving across the border to come to the States, where there seems to be a prevalence of, even Walmart has an excess amount. And you can go into Publix and get a shot. Isn't this wonderful? So we're erring on the side of being careful in this country, and I so celebrate that. There are still people who deny the virus, who don't want to get their shots, and I'm reminded when I was a little boy in the 50s, they had a thing called polio. And I can remember you'd see people in an iron lung, people who refused to get the polio vaccine. So there's a certain shift in consciousness where you're courageous enough to do something to protect not only yourself, but to protect other people. So I applaud all of you out there who have made the appointment, have had the shots. In fact, because my beloved Al Underbrink contracted the shingles and he was showing up here doing his job in pain, I thought, this courageous man with his mask on. And I had seen many people, even a young lady who came all the way from Brevard, North Carolina. She had the shingles virus for 2 years. And I still hadn't gotten the shot. But Al's pain was strong enough. Monday morning, I called my doctor, and they said, you don't even need a doctor's appointment. You can go right in. And Trey went right into Publix, and he got his shingle shot. I went into Star Market. They gave me the shingle shot. So whatever it is, be careful. Be smart. Someone reminded me, I think it was Seamus, that he says I'm speaking about evolution this month. Well, I'm not really, but because he said I am, maybe I will speak about evolution. I did last Sunday speak on a subject called Resolve to Evolve. And what I do know is that there's a thing called conscious evolution, which is what this teaching is about. But most people live by unconscious evolution. It takes something in life to kind of rattle their cage, and then grudgingly, they'll evolve. Seamus was reminding of a book called Power versus Force and this evolutionary ladder. So many people choose not to evolve, choose not to grow. But at this center, we choose to have a greater life experience. You know, when I was a brand new minister 30 plus years ago, I remember there's a thing called spiritual infancy. And spiritual infancy is where you want other people to tell you what to think. But then ultimately, there comes spiritual adolescence. And that's where you say, hell no, that dog don't hunt no more. My beloved Terry, she was in the Baptist church and they told her that God destroyed the planet and gave us a rainbow. And I think it was at age 8 or 9, she said, hell no, that's not a religion that I'm going to follow. So at 8 or 9, she left the church, and it took her another 25 years before she found us. But that ultimately, we evolved to a place called spiritual adulthood. And that's where you recognize that there's one power in the universe, only one. It doesn't have a religion. You can call it Brahman if you're from India. You can call it Allah if you're a Muslim. You can call it God if you're a Christian. There's one power in the universe, and you recognize it. And then ultimately, in this evolutionary process, you have to realize it within your own life. You get personal with it. If it's the ocean of love, could I be the wave of love expressing the ocean nature? Could I find the divinity in my humanity? And so then I'm divinely human and humanly divine. My prayer partner had an interesting dinner party with his previous teacher. Her name is Marilyn. And they were discussing the universe. And he said, have you ever had a dinner party, David, where the conversation was so exhilarating that you didn't want the evening to end? And I said, well, what were you talking about? And he says, well, we were talking about the absolute. And I said to her, Marilyn, isn't love the absolute? And she says, not to me, it isn't. She says, love is relative. She says, there's a lot of people out there I don't like. Ooh. And then I remember my teacher says, you don't have to like them, but you do have to love them. Ah, because what if this power that we're calling God, that we're calling Brahman, is love itself? And in this love, there is equanimity. There isn't a hierarchy of I love you, but I hate you. I gave Gigi my horticulture magazine, and it's filled with these amazing articles about nature. And one was about trees and how we in our Western culture, in our less evolved way of thinking about trees, we see them as commodities. We see them as objects. We want a small tree in the yard, not too big, because we might have the inconvenience of leaves. You know, every now and then I'll watch House Hunters, and they'll say, gotta cut the trees down. They're a nuisance. Don't want to clean up after them damn things. That's not a very evolved place. But in this article, there was this young lady from Africa, from Kenya, and she says, in my culture, the tree is a sacred place that you go and you sit under. The tree is the place where the Buddha awoke under. The tree is the giver of shade so that you can have your meetings. So when you regard the tree in your spiritual adulthood as part of the oneness, as part of the sacredness, then you don't just see it as a commodity that's an inconvenience. It becomes something more intimate as your own self. So the invitation is for all of us to evolve as a human being. And this month I started off by, by the way, the theme for this month, Seamus, is the art of being. And that's what we are. We're a being that's ever evolving and becoming more of our true nature. So it's like the little wave is becoming more and more of the ocean. Rumi has this beautiful little poem. He says, oh drop, give it up. To be wooed by the ocean. He says, the ocean for a drop? So could we, Mark, stop arguing for the drop's story and realize, oh my God, I am this love unfolding, unveiling itself, one apocalypse after another. Now, you know, apocalypse is a Christian phrase, kind of meaning the end of the world when we'll have the rapture and all that. That's not what apocalypse means. The apocalypse is an unveiling. And in order to have an apocalypse, you have to die daily to this story, to this false sense and all the patterns. Terry, you know about it. You die daily to that, and you're born again into this realization. We had a beautiful satsang this Wednesday evening, and Gloria G texted me right after and says, what the heck just happened there? I said, we were drinking from the well of the beloved. And she said, oh my God. And all we did was go around the circle, and everybody was expressing the divinity and their humanity coming together. And I was blown away by the depth. I mean, Jake, your words were poetry. And if I asked you to repeat it, you couldn't, because you were expressing from that well space. Oh, if you've had your shots, you can take off your masks, because that's what we're attempting to follow, the CDC rules. So good to see you again. Yeah, so what if we get to ask those relevant questions? Who am I being in this moment? Am I being trustful or am I not being trustful? In the science of mind, there was one sentence that rocked my world. The sentence, this is for you, Terry. The sentence from Ernest Holmes says, he who does not trust does not know God. You know, and at that particular moment, my trust level wasn't up here. And so I go, holy cow, could I learn to trust in life? That sometimes life gives us these growth experiences that are uncomfortable, but that's how we grow. That's how we evolve. And so then when the tough stuff happens, like the loss of our animals, Tia's lost two of her dogs recently, and I have my old Bert who's on the threshold of possibly leaving his body. But what that shows me is how sacred every single day is. I wake up in the morning wondering if when I go downstairs, if he's going to be breathing. Sometimes I find myself hovering and looking at him to see, because his breath is very shallow. and he's lost so much weight. He looks like, you know, you can see his ribs. And the neighbor lady, she screamed because he was so thin. And I found myself saying, well, you know, it's really, really quite nice that he's lost all this weight because I have to carry him up and down the stairs. So he's not the 80-pound dog that he's more like 40 pounds now. But yet every day is so sacred with him. So I know that when conditions are right, and I will know when that is, and then the next step for him is just to leave his body, but he'll still be here in spirit because we're spiritual beings. My prayer partner told me that he says, this week I had the most beautiful funeral. And he said it was a young man who was taking care of his father at the end of his life. And he says the sacredness of the dance that the two of them had. And he says, in Canada, you can't meet in large groups. He said, we can only have 10, and it's at the funeral. So he said there were 10 of the most meaningful people for the father. And he does this beautiful practice because he was a Catholic priest and they were Catholic. He puts this white garb over the coffin and he says, this is the baptism of their spirit into this next dimension. And so every family member takes the shroud off the coffin. And he said every ritual had significance, had value. And there was this homecoming, if you will, for the father who was returning to his true nature, because that's what we are. We're spiritual beings with a temporary human experience. Could we then have a relationship with death that's not the enemy? Death is not the enemy, because in truth, there is no death. And then, having said that, I say die daily. Die daily? Die daily to the old sense of self. Someone was talking, I think it was Adam, about purging himself of all the unnecessary things. And Mark says, I want to just burn all that stuff. What if it's just stuff? And when you're no longer attached to stuff, then you can just walk away from it. And that's what you're going to have to do with this thing someday. Walk away from this physical form and to know that you haven't really lost anything. You've really discovered who you have been all along. So in this 33rd year of my ministry, I'm teaching a class that I've taught before. It's Parker Palmer's book called On the Brink of Everything. And what I find so relevant for me at this particular time is that he's 80 years old and he's reflecting on a life well lived. And it's not like, he says, when I was young, I had ambitions to achieve. But when you get to a certain age, there's a certain grace that you want every moment to be so sacred. I see that for Bert. He's on the brink of everything. And so let me just give you a taste at the very beginning, his intention. And we'll set that as the tone for this Sunday's idea of the title of the talk is A New Way of Being Human. If we could find a new way to be a mensch, there's a Yiddish word, mensch, which means a real human being. A mensch is someone, like Raoul's a mensch. He's just a good guy. You need something, Raoul's there. And so could we find a new, and I think Parker Palmer's a mensch. So here at the very beginning, he tells us his intention. At age 80, he says this lovely phrase. This is for you, Sylvia, who's not 80 yet. He says, I like getting old. I like getting old. She's nodding her head. He says, my thinking has slowed down a bit. My twin sister called me and she went for one of those wellness tests that they give you after a certain age. And she said, she calls me Scott. She says, Scott, I think I've got Alzheimer's. I didn't pass the test. I said, well, if you can't remember apple, table, penny and how to spell world backwards, you just have maybe a little shortness of memory. You're fine. You don't have Alzheimer's. Trust me. Anyway, my thinking has slowed down a bit, he says, but experience has made it deeper and has made it richer. He says, I'm done with those big and complex projects, but I'm more aware of the loveliness of the simple things in life. You know, in the beautiful book Candide by Voltaire, it's all about this young man circling the whole planet, having all these adventures. And at the end of the book, he comes back to his little village in France. And the conclusion of this book, of this life well lived and all these adventures, he comes to the realization, Voltaire does, that I guess we're all just here to tend our garden. Those simple little things. To get up in the morning, to make that coffee, to carry Bert outside so he can do his business, to give him his little raviolis for breakfast if he'll eat them. He was eating this morning. Okay, so I'm not looking for those big complex projects, but more aware of the loveliness of the simple little things. A talk with a friend, like Terry had with his old teacher. He said it was the most exhilarating evening. A walk in the woods. a sunset or a sunrise. Or maybe it's just a night of good sleep. Don't you love it when you wake up rested and the birds are singing and you leap out of bed because of, Gigi knows what I'm talking about because she's had challenges sleeping. At age 72, my favorite thing is to take a nap. I learned this when I was in Italy and Spain because they all take siestas over there. And you'd want to go shopping, but everything was closed. It's siesta time. I thought, what a lazy culture. Well, now I've learned that I like the siesta time. You know, you just lay down. The dogs sleep half the day. The cats sleep. Shouldn't I get a little nap around 11 o'clock, maybe for half an hour? He says, I have fears at 80. I have fears. Of course I do. And I'll always have them, and I always will. He says, but as time lengthens like a shadow behind me and the time ahead of me dwindles, he uses this metaphor of like this ark. And up at the top of the ark, you've got the young people looking on this life like Adam's up there. But then you come down to the bottom of the ark, and that's where Gigi and I and Raul are hanging out. We've had this long shadow of a life, but it's important to keep the young ones there so they can remind us. And so he's saying this too, that this long shadow behind me and the time ahead is dwindling. But my overriding feeling at this stage of life is gratitude for the gift of the life that I've been given. To be so grateful. You know, after the heart attack, that was my one prevailing feeling. I'm alive. Could I be grateful for this life that's still beating in my heart? You know, and see everything. Every morning I wanted to wake up and see the sunrise. I didn't want to miss the sunrise. I had this overwhelming urge to tell everybody that I love you. Al, have I told you I love you? Adam, have I told you? I was just this intoxicated because as they were wheeling me down on the gurney, I realized I hadn't said to my husband I love him. And I thought, I'm going to die and I'm never going to had said those words. When I came out of the anesthesia and the doctor was standing over me, I said, I love you. I don't know who he was, but I said, you saved my life. Yep, I did. He says, so don't screw it up. That's what he said to me. He says, above all, I like being old because the view from the brink, and it's called the brink of everything, is striking. There's a full panorama of a life well lived, and a bracing breeze awakens me to new ways of understanding my own past, my present, and my future. You begin to see things clearly, not from the dysfunctional, troubled youth that said, oh, why can't things be the way I want them? You begin to realize they were perfect just as they were, and things had to fall apart so that you could evolve and grow, Mark. It had to happen. So, he says, I keep hearing Kurt Vonnegut in his book, The Piano Player, who says, on the edge of everything, you can see all kinds of things that you can't see from the center. When you go to the circumference, you can look at the job and you can see why that job didn't serve your soul. You can look at a relationship whose time has run out and you can let it go. You don't have to cling to those old relationships. You know, they're having a big family reunion of the Leonards. That's my last name. And it's going to be in North Dakota. And these are the people that never really approved of my lifestyle. I'm a gay man. They never approved of this religion that I'm involved in. And so when they call me to come back to the family reunion, it's kind of like Sylvia going to Mexico, New York. I think, why? You're my family. I don't think the conversation around the campfire would be, and tell me about your religion. I don't think that's what it would be. So from the brink of everything, you can look back and he says, I see why I needed the tedium and the inspiration. This is a man who had severe depression. And he says, I realized that the depression took me to a deeper sense of who I am. I needed the anger and I needed the love. I needed the anguish and I needed the joy. And I see how it all belongs. Even those days of despair when the darkness seemed to overwhelm me. Calamities I once lamented now appear as strong threads of a larger weave without which the fabric of my life would be less resilient. Are you hearing that, Jake? Are you hearing that? It makes the stronger weave. So what if the rich parts of our life that seem kind of controversial are the juicy parts? That's how we evolved. That's how we woke up. So moments of fulfillment I failed to relish. In my impatience to get on to the next thing, they now appear as the times to be recalled and savored. Could I recall those really troubled times and savor them? When everything seemed to go to hell in a handbasket, those were the breakthrough times. He says it can either be a breakdown or a breakthrough. At this stage of my life, I choose to call them breakthrough moments, even though maybe a breakdown had to precede the breakthrough. Lastly, he says, and I've doubled down on my gratitude for those who've helped me along with love. And you're all out there. You've all helped me so much. The affirmations, the hard questions, the daunting challenges, the compassion, and the forgiveness. Huh. Could I wake up from a sleep and have compassion for that part of me that maybe was less than skillful, maybe who was a troubled, shamed young man? Could I have forgiveness for all those who I have judged, maybe had done ill to me? And ultimately, all forgiveness is self-forgiveness. So could I forgive myself for holding them out of my heart? Boy, it's one beautiful journey. Even at age 80, it doesn't end. So could we let this be a way to navigate as we take off our masks and we look around our world and we ask, what would bring meaning into my life at this stage of its evolution? You know, when you're young, you have certain ambitions. You know, my beloved Emily wants to sing at the Met with her beautiful operatic voice. But maybe she just wants to sing over an old dog who's making his transition, and she'll sing a lullaby to him. One of my favorite memories was when Gigi and I went to visit one of the church folks, and she was a young, troubled woman. She'd had a very tumultuous life. Her relationships didn't work out. She was abandoned by her mother. I think she had issues with her children. And of course, she's dying at this stage. And she was from Germany originally. And when we went over there, it wasn't about fixing her. There was nothing to fix. It was about helping her transition into the next dimension. And I realized I could, I've been asked literally to pray someone out of their body. And let me tell you, you can't do it. I've said the angels are here, they're all waiting, but the love in the room will keep them here. So at this particular encounter, Gigi was with me, and intuitively, she lay down in the bed next to this young woman, and she put her arms around, and she sang a lullaby in German. And I could tell that that simple act, which was her being this loving presence, was exactly what was needed. Now, did she go in there with an intention to do that? I don't think she had any plan. Something just opened her heart, and she realized it's just about loving her. I was talking to my prayer partner about, is love the absolute? And we both agreed that it is. My teacher, Kennedy Schultz, used to poo-poo love. You know, even though in the science of mind says all is love and all is law, and let love lead the way and the law will make the way possible. So they extol it in the text about the love, but very few people can be the love. And he was one of those that his mother died when he was born, so he never had the love of a mother. His father was kind of an abusive man, and he was abusive to me. And so he said to me, as he was making his transition, David, I need you to forgive me. He said, my father abused me, and Raymond, his teacher, abused him. And he says, so I abused you. He says, can you forgive me? And I said, of course I forgive you. And then he's the one that would say, we are not a hugging church. This is not, this love thing is overrated. Well, I realized he didn't know it because he hadn't had it. So at the end, with the brain tumor, he became like a child. And you know, it even says in scripture, you must be like a child if you would enter the kingdom. And when I say he became like a child, he became very vulnerable. And all he says, all he could do was cry. Now here's a man who poo-pooed emotions. And all he did was cry. And he said, it's the symptom of the brain tumor. I said, sure it is, Ken. And when someone would try to talk principle to him, he'd say, I don't need you to tell me principle. I just need you to hold me. So at the end, he was 70 years old. You would hold him and he would cry. And then he would say things to me like, David, it's all about the love. You have to tell them it's all about the love. And I said, okay, I'll tell them it's all about the love. So could we find a new order of human being where we become the love and then we sing the lullaby? And that's the doing. But the being is what's most important. Our beloved Doretta made her transition on the 10th. And this lady lived to be over 100 years old. And she was one of those kind of individuals that says, I will not die. I will not die. She was even talking about her 101st birthday to Gigi before she made her transition. But you know, when conditions are right, the spirit leaves the body. And I loved how Gigi sent me a text in the morning. She said, Doretta entered the light last night. Isn't that a lovely way to think about it? The light was always there. It was beckoning to her. And when you've been on as many deathbed scenarios as I have, there's a thing in Buddhism, they talk about telling them to go to the light. And the light, my Sufi teacher said, is your own higher self. So when the moment comes and we're leaving this mortal coil, the light within us enters the light that's beckoning us, because it's the one light, the one life. I have a tickle in my throat, so the grace of water is so wonderful. So I started off this month in The Art of Being, speaking about you are God's seed. You are God's seed. It was Meister Eckhart that said, if you, an oak, he says, an acorn becomes an oak tree, a pear seed becomes a pear tree, and a God seed becomes a God. And he says, the God seed has been planted within all of us. Now, could we be humble enough to let this God seed begin to grow and develop? And you have to be so humble to experience the divinity of what you are. And then you sing for God. You paint for God. You dance for God. Because it's all for God. I do, everything I do is to serve the one. To serve the one in the many and the many in the one. Raoul reminds me what we are is a panentheistic teaching. You know, there's monotheism, which says there's one God, and they usually place him up in the sky. Then there's polytheism, which has many gods. But we are what they call panentheistic. Now, panentheistic means that we're in God, because God's all there is, and God is in us. Wow, is that too intimate for you? So could we know this directly? So you can use the metaphor as the breath. The breath is all around us, we're breathing it, and yet it comes from within us. Breath is another word for spirit. So we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Prioritize it. Spirit was never born, spirit never dies. That's the Bhagavad Gita. Do we need to know where it comes from? So the truth, these threads of truth are woven, and when they begin to awaken within us, it's as if we come home to the realization. Tatwam asi, thou art that. All there is that. And when that is ready to awaken, it'll awaken in your own unique way. So I love to find people who I consider awake people who are going through challenges. My beloved Jeff Foster has got some rare disease right now. And every day it's a struggle for him to get up. He's really compromised. And you talk about a dark past. He lived in depression for years. And he would have the courage to write a book called Falling in Love with Everything. Falling in Love with Where You Are. Even if where you are is a very troubled place. So here's how Jeff Foster talks about this. He says, dying to all you think you know, letting go of the image of how life should be, sinking into the vast mystery of this present moment, embracing change and loss as simply misunderstood friends, falling in love with where you are. This is the path for those who know there is no path. Only endless destinations and never-ending beginnings. We're always beginning. We're always beginning. We're always a choice point. We can consciously evolve. We can be here now. We can see the grace. We can fall in love with where we are. We're sitting here in Huntsville, Alabama. 90% of you are not wearing masks. You've been vaccinated. Huh? You're choosing to consciously evolve, to sing your song and not somebody else's song. And so he quotes Nisargadatta. You'll love this, Glory G. Nisargadatta said, once you realize that the road is your goal and that you're always on the road, you're not to reach a goal, but you're here to enjoy the beauty and all of its wisdom. He talks about not getting intellectual knowledge, but coming from that place of wisdom. Wisdom is inherent. The soul is wise. Your ancient eternal soul, Amanda, is wise. That's what we discovered in that generational healing. Your ancestor was wise. She wasn't a victim. Boy, and as the young you, I realized that it was all grace. So once you realize that the road is the goal and that you're always on the road, not to reach a goal, but to enjoy its beauty and its wisdom, then life ceases to be a task and life becomes natural and simple. In itself, life is an ecstasy. Life is an ecstasy. I was reading Bede Griffith, this sannyasin, this enlightened teacher who was a Benedictine monk and also a sannyasin, one of the wisest men, and he talks about, in Hinduism, they talk about Brahman as this universal power. And then they talk about Atman, which is the soul, and they say Brahman and the Atman are one. So to know ourselves as that, that it moves through the soul. And then he talks about the wisdom of the Buddha. And the Buddha awoke to the realization that all life is suffering. And yet there's this awakened part of us that can know that amidst the suffering, there is that which is awake. What a gift, he said. So then you don't identify with the suffering. Yes, suffering is a part of this life experience, but you are the awakened presence in the midst of that suffering. And we're all on this road of unfoldment. This saintly young man who's going through so much hell physically is finding the grace in that. So what is grace going to look like? Grace for Bert looks like me carrying him down the stairs. And I feel so privileged to be in service to him. Grace for Bert is me trying to get him to eat, finding any possible. I've asked Adam to come and visit because if I need help during those final moments, he'd be the kind of one that would be there to help me navigate. That's why we do need each other when we're going through these challenging times. You can love where you are, but where you are might be not so comfortable, you know? And could we love that too? You know, Raul's going through some health challenges. He's my hero. He never once complains about it. And I just want to know what a beautiful example you set for all of us. Yeah, so could we find a way to make the small stuff, to fall in love with the life that we've been given? I wanted to close with some Mark Nepo. Here's another individual who has survived cancer twice and who came out the other end with so much depth. And the invitation for us, in order to find this new order of being human, could we find the sacredness of our challenge? He talks about the sacred wound, and they call them the wounded healers. Because you've had that wound, you have an empirical experience that you've gone through that. Glory G had a stroke. She's come back with such depth. Now, not that you didn't have it before the stroke, but we can call it pre-stroke, post-stroke. There's a different Glory G that came through that. I feel Adam was different. I didn't meet him before he had his stroke, but there's a depth in him that I think you can attribute possibly to that bad situation. Are we going to call it bad? Or maybe it's just a life situation. And so Mark Nepo talks about that in this book in such a beautiful way that I wanted to close with this and maybe do a little meditation. He calls this seeing it through, this life experience. And he says, to see it and walk through it when it opens is everything. Shingles. Al saw it and walked through it. Bert's, he has what they call ODS, old dog syndrome. A year and a half ago, we thought Bert was on his way out, and Trey and I were going up to Maine for Christmas. And Al, through his graciousness, moved into the house. I said, that's going to require that you sleep with a pug. He said, no problem. So he had the pug in his bed, and he had old Bert on the floor. And when we came back from Maine, Bert was back to normal. So you see it through, he says. To see and walk through it when it opens is everything. It's how Picasso developed cubism. It's how Miles Davis stumbled onto Dolphin Street. It's how Derek Jeter knew the relay would land between first base and home and no one else would be there. It's through this opening that Albert Schweitzer saw his hospital in Africa long before he was a doctor there. It's here that we all see love waiting in an open field. Though there are storms all around us, the love is waiting for us. And it's what the whale goes for each time it breaches in the ocean. It's how I find the poems, or maybe how the poems find me. It's how the kind know how to help. It's how the German knows how to sing a lullaby to a young girl who needed a mother's love at that moment. He says, there's something in us, and this is, it's that something, that being that we all share. And you get to ask your soul, what is mine here to, how am I here to be? And lastly, this is how he talks about it. He said, we each arrive on this planet with a gift hidden in a wound and many years to birth it. Each given a heart to carry and rough seas to calm. Each is seeded with a worthiness and a love after love through which to accept. And each is called to enter a sorrow like an underwater cave, with the breathless chance to break surface in the same world with everything aglow. Each one of us has this journey to take. And remember, the path is the journey. And maybe the path means a heart attack for a David, or a stroke for an Adam, or shingles for an Al. Maybe it means a relationship issue. Anybody have relationships that didn't work out? How sacred was that? You know, that was the greatest gift, I think, for anyone who's been on the other side of a relationship. It teaches you forgiveness. And really, what you were really seeking was your own self, right, Seamus? And you've evolved so beautifully since, anyway. If we make it this far, we can, on any given day, marvel that clouds are simply clouds. And then we can name ourselves anew. We can use the gift born of our wound to find an unmarked spot from which we can live. Huh. To live from that healed wound that we have inside ourselves. And, he says, if we settle there, giving our all without giving ourselves away, that's so important, not to give yourself away, then the heart within our heart will flower and the whole world will drink of its nectar. If we can allow this something, this ineffable something, to flower within our hearts, the heart of hearts, the heart of the universe, then we provide that space for others to drink from that well. I read a poem about a little girl who had a monarch butterfly in a jar, and she loved that butterfly, even when the butterfly died in the jar. And everywhere she went, I thought of Eugene, she carried her jar with the dead butterfly, with this lifeless, weightless little thing that she had so nurtured because it was a part of her. And as I was reading that poem, I realized, she recognized that the spirit never died, you know? So let's just stop long enough to observe who we are in this holy instant. To breathe into the space, the spaciousness of being. To rest in the grace of Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is truth. The truth that's always there, the truth that unhides itself, that reveals itself from within. Chit, which is consciousness, that operates through a field of awareness. In that awareness, thoughts arise, but thoughts are small things compared to awareness. Awareness precedes all thought. And so the invitation is to surrender into this awake, aware essence that we all share. It was Goethe that said, "What is God but a simple essence, the cost of which is nothing less than everything?" And so the everything would be all the me stuff, all the sense of myself as separate from other. And really, the separate self is the illusion, is the dream. And all the 10,000 things in the world, the material stuff of this life, is the maya, is the illusion. And so we just let go of attachment to the maya. We let go of an attachment to the little me. And that's what this concept of emptiness is in Buddhism. We're empty of the local self. And when the local self is no longer running the show, well, then we're operating from the one life, from the one presence, from love itself. A love that doesn't grasp, a love that has no special object, even though we do have many that are dear to us. This is a love that has equanimity. It's the love that a gardener has for the whole garden, not just his rose bushes. But you can actually love the weed by the garden wall and know that it's all part of the one life. And so as we consciously breathe into this awakening that is always ongoing, I invite you to rest in the heart of the one, the heart of God, if you will, the heart of love. And just be here now. I invite you to image some object of love. It could be a pet of yours. It could be a friend. It could be your partner. It could be this beautiful planet. It could be the stars in heaven. You know, Pinocchio was Geppetto's little puppet. But Geppetto wanted Pinocchio to be a real boy. And so what Geppetto told Pinocchio is to wish upon a star. When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires can come to you. And so what if we became like that child that would enter the kingdom of heaven, and we learned to wish upon a star, a celestial being, for expanded awareness, to wish for ananda, which means bliss, ecstasy. My Zen calendar this morning was Akin Khan, who said, happiness arises when there is the absence of seeking happiness. So happiness, the pursuit of happiness, is kind of a vain, pointless effort when you realize that happiness is there all along. And so by entering into the heart of the One, we discover the ecstasy of being. The ecstasy of being divine and being human at the same time. The ecstasy of knowing that we're spirit, having a human experience. And so our humanity then evolves into a higher order of being human. This being human, is being compassionate. This being human is to forgive. This being human is to have our unconscious become conscious so that we can choose who we will be in this moment. It says in the Bible, choose you this day who you will serve, God or mammon. Are we going to serve the stuff, or are we going to serve the presence that's breathing us? When we serve the One, the One rejoices. So I invite you to enter into that stillness, that silence, the silence that's always there. My Zen calendar the other day said, you enter into the silence not when the noise subsides, but you enter into the silence when there's no me commenting. So we hear the bird outside and we smile, because we're not separate from that song. And we begin to discover and listen to our own inner song that longs to express. Claiming the grace of your own presence, I invite you to put your hands over your heart now as we join together in the heart salutation. And really get intimate with yourself when you say to the self within the self, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I adore you.
I adore you.
You are the deepest aspect of my soul. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
In this spaciousness we are one.
In this spaciousness we are one.
Open your eyes, open your hands. You know, I mentioned last week that they're allowing yoga in the schools, but I read the article, Emily. They don't allow namaste, they don't allow any chants, and they don't allow any mantras. So without that, I'll say namaste, om namah shivaya, and all is well. And so it is.
Amen. Amen.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.